So, Chaim and Sarah have been dating very seriously. And finally, Chaim realizes the time has come where he should pop the question. So he tells Sarah, let's make up. Thursday night, we go out on Yafo Street, and he sets the time, an hour and a half before sunset. He goes down to the restaurant, he chooses the place, he chooses the music, he chooses the menu, he chooses the dessert. He even brings a small little gift, which he tells them to bring out with the dessert. And he goes home, he takes a haircut, he takes a shower, he puts on his finest suit. And the time comes, and they go out to the date, and it's like a dream come true. They're sitting there, and there's a beautiful, gentle breeze, and the music is just as he planned it. And as they're sitting and talking, they're looking at the sunset over the old city. And when the dessert comes, that small little gift he prepared for her, they bring out. And he's sitting, and he's talking, and he says to her, "Sarah, so tell me, what do you think?" Silence. And for 3 seconds that seemed like eternity, she doesn't say a word. And then a muffled little stifled, bashful laugh, and she says, "Well, Chaim, I have to say, everything is beautiful. And under such circumstances, obviously we both feel like this is it. But this isn't the time to make such a decision. Let's get off the high and let's talk about it tomorrow." So they end the date. They're walking with the pleasant memories of the date. He walks her home. He goes back home. And the next morning, he waits. He davens. He's still walking on cloud number 9. And he lifts the phone and he calls Sarah. So, after 3 rings, she answers, and they talk a little bit the way couples do, and finally he says, "Well, what do you think?" And she says, "Well, what do you think?" And he says, "What do you mean?" And she says, "Well, what did you think about the date last night?" And he says, "The first course was magnificent. The second course was out of this world. The sunset was stunning. The music, what talent. The final course, the dessert." And he hears a busy sound. "Sarah, are you still there? Sarah? Sarah?" She hung up on him. He's talking about everything but her. First course, the second course, the third course, the sunset, the music. But what's the main point? You're talking about marrying me. What about your time with me? You know what? We're all that way. We're about to enter Shabbos. And some people enter Shabbos and come out of Shabbos, and what they talk about was how long they slept, what flavor the chulent was, how squishy the meal was. That's not what Shabbos is about. That's the guy coming after the date and talking about the first course, second course, third course, but he missed the point. And we have to often stop and ask ourselves, am I focusing on the point or am I missing the point? And I understand that living 8 or 10 or 12 people in a room is no picnic. I'm not denying the facts. But we also have to maintain focus and ask ourselves, this is an opportunity. And what are we going to do with that opportunity? When I was in Merkaz Harav, on the Friday night meals, I would come down, wash, eat, and 20 minutes later I was back in the Beis Medrash learning. So a bunch of kind-hearted people came to me, each one took his turn, and said to me, "Why don't you sit down and sing with everyone at the meal downstairs?" And I always said, "Oh, I like singing, and I will sing when the time is right. But right now I'm in yeshiva, and I have a golden opportunity to learn Torah. I don't owe anyone anything. I don't have a wife that wants me to sing Zmiros. I don't have kids who I need to sing Zmiros with. I'm not at my parents' table where I have to sing Zmiros. I'm alone. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to learn. So I came from a home where I sang Zmiros my whole life. I knew that Bezrat Shem, when I build a home, I knew the tunes and I'd be able to sing. At your stage of the game, could be the most important thing is to stay and sing Zmiros. I'm not telling you to go learn. But what I am saying is that we have to know that life is about windows of opportunity. And the opportunities you have now in Machon Me'il do not repeat themselves in life. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the time you have here. And part of the question is, what will you focus on during your period here? And it's up to you. You could focus on the fact that there is no air conditioning in the dorm rooms. You could focus on the cats meowing outside the window. You could focus on the coffee that you don't like, and why don't they have, why is it called Nescafe and it's a delicacy in this country, and why don't they ever serve milk with coffee? You could focus on all kinds of very important things, and you'll walk away knowing these things very well. But you should realize that this opportunity does not repeat itself. Bezrat Hashem, you will lead productive lives, and the nature of productive lives is that you don't have the time to focus on Torah the way you do now. Life is demanding. A wife, children, a home, expenses, parents, in-laws. The nature of life is that you don't have this opportunity again. And so you have to ask yourself a few times, a week, a month, a year, what's important to me? And I suggest that each of you take the time, and I do this every year, take a piece of paper, and ask yourself, what are your goals? What do you want to get out of your time at Machon Meir? What do you want to get out of the coming year? You're coming off of a year. Rosh Hashanah is a brand new beginning. Clean page. And I don't know anyone's history here. So you're really starting fresh. You have a clean slate. I always like going to shuls where no one knows me. I hate downing with you guys. No offense. But I feel like everyone's looking at my back. And that was one of the challenges that I really don't like about being a rabbi of a community. I'm standing there in front of everyone, the spotlight. I feel like running to the back of the shul. Who wants to be there? What do I have to stand in front of everyone for? I want to talk to God. I don't want to feel like everyone's looking at what I'm doing. It's a challenge.
But
you guys, you're on to a new beginning. No one knows your history. No one knows what you did last week. No one's going to know. No one needs to know. Don't tell us. I don't want to know. But this is a new week. This is a new beginning. And take advantage of it. And ask yourself, what's important? Because there are always going to be hardships in life. But there are never again going to be these golden opportunities. You have a tremendous number of people to take advantage of. You know, Rav Lichtman left. Did anyone walk him to his car? If I were a student here, I'd walk him. And I'd be asking questions the whole way. I learned a lot by walking rabbis to their car, to their house. You know, I used to be the garbage man of Mordechai Eliyahu's house. Anytime I had time that I was walking by the house, I'd knock on the door and say, "Could I take out the garbage?" Because by walking from the door to the garbage, back to the door, I learned a tremendous amount. Just being in that house, just seeing certain things that were going on in the house. I brought a car to the Lower East Side for the sole purpose of giving Rabbi Feinstein a ride. The car was sitting parked all day, all week, except for when I could give him a ride. That was the whole reason I brought a car there. Because I could learn from it. By sitting next to him in the car, and by seeing the way he treated people, and by just, you know, you guys know what a car looks like, right? An automobile, four wheels, right? And there's a little hump in the back seat. So whenever we'd give a ride, Rabbi Feinstein would go in the back seat and sit over the hump. They'd always let him sit first. So what do you do when you sit first? You try to figure out, how am I going to get the seat that's not on the hump, right? No one wants to be the one stuck with his legs spread out and everyone... So what does he do when he gets into the car? He automatically sits himself in the middle so everyone can get in around him, and he's got the worst seat in the car. A little thing, right? Little thing, but big thing. I once gave him a ride, and there was I had left a safer on his seat. So I was embarrassed. He sat down and suddenly realized there's a safer on there. So he pulls it out, and I turn bright red, so he wants to calm me down. So he says, "Isn't it a pity we can't learn by just doing that?" You know, he cracks a joke to make me feel good. I once rode a bike to yeshiva, and I'm walking into yeshiva, dripping sweat. Okay? So I walk in and Potluck has it. I'm taking off my helmet. And I'm asking myself, is it such a nice thing to take a bike to Yeshiva or not? Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm new to the place. And he walks in. So I'm standing there and I turn bright red. Here I was asking myself, should I be doing this? And now I have to have the Rosh Yeshiva standing there. So he sees me and he sees I'm uncomfortable. So right away he says, what a neat bike. Wow, did you ride all the way from Muncie? And he starts telling me like he's one of the guys. But to make me feel comfortable. I was once walking with Rav Traeger and my shoe was untied. So he's doing me a favor that I could walk with him and learn as we're walking. So we're walking and he sees my shoe untied. He didn't say a word. He just bent down and undid his shoe and started tying his own shoelace so that as he's doing it, I'd feel comfortable doing mine. He didn't say one word as though he just needed to tie his own shoelace. The sensitivities of big people, and they don't say a word. They're thinking how what everyone else around them and how what they're going to do is going to impact the other person. He didn't tell me, hey, your shoe's untied, don't trip. He didn't say one word. He saw it. He bent down and tied his own shoelace as though it was undone. I was sitting next to Rav Bigun a year ago. And Rav Bigun needed a sitter. He wanted to, he was asked to speak, and he needed a sitter. So he asked Rav Listman to get him a sitter. He was stuck behind the dais. Rav Listman was sitting on the other side of the dais. So he asked him to get him a sitter. Rav Listman gets up to get him a sitter, and I see that Rav Bigun is waiting, and Rav Listman has to turn. And suddenly I notice there's a sitter right there. So I tell him, Rav, here's the sitter. Points to me, don't pick up that sitter. Why? Because he was a step ahead of me. Rav Lisman got up to get him a sitter. If he's going to come back and find him using a sitter, he's going to feel like, what did I go get him a sitter for, right? So in 1 second, he was one step ahead. You have opportunities now. You have opportunities to learn from people and learn from the small moments of care. I could go on all night with fantastic stories. Each one, small stories, but when you see it, you suddenly see, wow, where are they holding? What do they see when they walk down the street? And, okay, want one more story? Fine. A guy came to MTJ, came to Rabbi Feinstein's yeshiva, and at the end of davening, he asks people, I wanted to see the Rosh Yeshiva. Where's Rabbi Feinstein? So someone points. He says, that's him. So the man looks. And he says, that's Rabbi Feinstein? And he turns pale. He turns like really white. So they asked him, what's the problem? So he says, well, I came here early in the morning. And it was only me here, a few other people, and him. And he walked by and extended his hand. So I was sure he was a beggar. So I pulled out a dollar and I put it in his hand. So the guy says, and what did he do? So he says, he said, thank you very much. And he put it in his pocket and continued walking. That was Rabbi Feinstein. In 1 second, he caught what the other guy's thing. I won't embarrass him. I won't say a word. No problem. Took it, put it in his pocket, didn't say a word. Okay, you'll give it to a pauper later. So the man's standing there, and now he realizes, what did he just do? Rav Moshe was walking up the staircase, and the guy who helped him, his name was Moshe, too. So a guy at the bottom of the staircase calls up to the young man, Moshe! So Rav Moshe turns around and says, yeah. Because in his mind, it was Moshe, you know. What is that? It happens to be there's a halacha that you don't call a name of a rabbi. Name, yeah. You see that humility that he didn't wait to be called rabbi. When they said Moshe, he was sure they were talking to him. In his mind, he was still Moshe. You guys know the story about the lefty righty, the silly kid. I told you this story, no? A guy came to Moshe Feinstein and he said, my son, he's slightly ambidextrous. He uses his left hand, his right hand. Which hand should he put his tefillin on? So Rav Moshe Feinstein said, I'll think about it. I'll get back to you. Give me your phone number. So, you know this stuff. So the guy said, okay. Seemed a little funny. This wasn't such a hard question. So, Erev Shabbos, 10 minutes before candle lighting, the phone rings. Rav Moshe asks to speak to the guy, and he tells him, your son should put on his tefillin as though he were a righty. Fine. Okay. Years later, the guy is wondering, why did Rav Moshe do this? So, he mentions it to one of the people who were Rav Moshe's assistants. And the guy tells him, oh, I know the real story behind the story. So he says, really? What's going on? Why didn't he answer me on the spot and then call me back and call me just before Shabbos? So he said, well, Rav Moshe knew that your son had a limp. And it was a limp, right? Not a stutter. Limp. I think it was a limp. And the kid was self-conscious. Everywhere he goes, people are looking at him. He has a limp. And in Halacha, there's an opinion that says he should put on film like a lefty. And there's an opinion that says he should put on film like a righty. Rav Moshe figured that it's not fair to make your son put on tefillin different than everyone else. It's bad enough that people stare at him because he has a limp. He knew that if he told you that your son should put on his tefillin like a righty, you'd start asking him, but so-and-so says this, and so-and-so says that. So what did he do? You came with the question. He says, I'll think about it. I'll get back to you. When did he call you? 10 minutes before Shabbos. Who has a head to argue 10 minutes before Shabbos? So 10 minutes before Shabbos, he gave you the answer, and you didn't have a head to argue with him, and that's it. That's the way it was. So the guy got very upset. He said, of course I would have argued with him. He's my boy. You don't think I know my boy? He didn't care that he had a limp. He would have wanted to know what he should do. Why did Rav Moshe answer me like that? So Rav Moshe's helper said to him, you think you know your son better than Rav Moshe? So he said, what do you mean? I'm his father. So he said, okay, call the boy. So they call the boy over. The boy's already 18, 19 years old. And they asked him, what were you thinking when your father went to ask Rav Moshe how you should put on tefillin? So the kid said, when I heard about it a week earlier, that whole week all I was davening was, let Rav Moshe have me put on tefillin like a righty. Everyone stares at me the way I walk. They shouldn't stare at me because I put on tefillin funny too. That's what I was thinking the whole week. So the father didn't sense that his son was so self-conscious, but Rav Moshe did. So coming back to the point at hand, the Meiri writes, we don't learn Torah from the books, we learn Torah from the authors. Obviously we learn from the books. But we can learn much more by trying to get to be in close proximity with the people who actually wrote the books. And you're at the Mahon, so take advantage of the time you're here. Yeah, I know you could learn from Art Scroll when you're back in Herzliya. But now you're here with the live people. So take advantage of the people. Take advantage of the community. Take advantage of the yeshiva you're in, the atmosphere you're in. And that, Be'ezrat Hashem, you'll take back with you. And you could learn so much from it. I always say, we had a student who walked into the Machon, and I was convinced that he was frum from birth. Everything that came up, he knew the lingo, he knew everything. 2 or 3 years into his stay in the Machon, we were talking, and he tells me that he grew up in a home where they didn't eat kosher, and they didn't keep Shabbos, and nothing. So I asked him, how do you know so much about Judaism? So he told me that when he was 15 or 16, he finished high school, and he went cross-country, he went to the East Coast, and he started working on the stock exchange as a gopher, and every evening and night, he would go to Jewish homes, and he would learn in a yeshiva, and on Shabbos, he'd always frequent different homes, and through being a part of the family, he learned what Jewish life was all about. So the Machon is a fantastic place. But you could learn even more than what we teach at the Machon if you make it your business. Rav Lisman said, Friday night this week is an in Shabbos, be at the Machon. But Shabbos day, try to get a meal out of the Machon. Try to start finding families where you could frequent the families and see what living Jewish is all about. It's not about the theory, the text, the laws of Shabbos. Technically, yes, that's what we do. But there's much more to it. And that much more to it you'll catch by being in the homes. As much as you can, you guys try to go to homes. Don't just see one home. Try to see a few homes on a consistent basis. Not 1 week, but many weeks. And as you see it, you'll learn from it. And you'll grow from it. And I can tell you, before I got married, I also went to different homes and I learned a lot. I remember I had a friend who had a lot of children, and I learned from him that whenever the kids would bring out the food, before he'd put food on his plate or pass it around, he'd put food on his wife's plate. So that when she came out of the kitchen, she got the best portion, not the worst portion, the leftovers from everyone else. He ensured she got a good portion. That's nice. It's a nice idea. I saw in his house. And every house I was in, I try to pay attention. Sometimes you learn what you should do, and sometimes you learn what you don't want to do, right? Say it. You learn from every house. But it's important to go. And in most houses, you'll see what you should do. And that's much more than you could learn in any classroom. So...